Welcome to the Princeton Laxcast. I'm Jerry Price, and I'm here with Princeton head men's lacrosse coach Matt Madelon. Coach, welcome.
Happy to be back.
So, a little bit of a disappointing performance in the Ivy Opener against Penn, and a huge game coming up this weekend against Yale. But first, let's talk about a sport you love, which is hockey. And the men's hockey team getting to the NCAA tournament, they will play right after the men's lacrosse game, which is 1 o'clock on Saturday at Yale. The men's hockey team will play at 3:30 against Ohio State in the opening round of the NCAA tournament. That game can be seen on ESPNU. And I know you love hockey and love a lot and know a lot about hockey, and I know you follow the program closely. Did you watch the games last weekend, the ECAC semifinal and final? And I got a specific question coming up here, but go ahead.
I actually didn't get a chance to watch them, but we as a program, we recruit a lot of hockey lacrosse guys. You know, we're big fans of Coach Fogarty and his staff and their program, so we're really excited. We're really excited for those guys. They got a good draw, tough bracket, but hockey's a game of bounces, so it only takes one to go in your direction, and you can catch fire there, so we're hoping that's the case.
So one of the things I try to do with Courtney in the in her podcast is get inside the mind of a coach. So what happened was they gave up a goal with 6.4 seconds left in regulation in the championship game against Clarkson. Now, Clarkson already knew it was going to the NCAA tournament. So for hockey, I don't know if you know a lot about how it works, but they have these pairwise rankings, and you are what your ranking is, and that's it. And so there's no drama. Everybody knew the teams, and they move the seedings around a little bit for geography and things like that. But for the most part, you know where you're going. So Clarkson knew they were in. Cornell knew they were in. But Clarkson, you know, you still find yourself in a championship game, and you want to win it. And the interesting thing about Princeton is that by Princeton and Boston University winning, they knocked out North Dakota and Minnesota, which is kind of fascinating because those are the two last teams, and they're the powerhouse teams. But so you give up a goal with 6.4 seconds to go. Now, in lacrosse, it's a little bit different because that happens more than it does in hockey. You have to pull the goalie in hockey, and, you know, you're leaving your net empty. And the other part is that you now have this long intermission before you go to overtime. But when you give up a goal like that, what are the chances? What is everybody thinking at that point? Like, oh, my God, we were so close and we blew it? Or they're like, all right, we're right here, next goal wins?
I mean, I think, you know, I think at that point, you know, as a coach, you hope that, you know, your seniors and the leaders on your team can put a calming influence throughout the locker room. I mean, you still have every opportunity to win a Final Four, win a Frozen Four. So, again, going into that, I mean, I would say you'd immediately think you'd be deflated, but that emotion wouldn't get you anywhere when it comes down to it. So I think that you need to quickly flip the switch and understand that you still have an opportunity ahead of you. And it looks like they did just that. So really, really incredible stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, so I was watching the game and I was thinking, oh, no, you know, maybe it got away from them, but then they outshot Clarkson 7-1 in the overtime before they scored. I mean, they swarmed him in the overtime. So clearly either their mental state was good or their coach said something or they all believed in themselves, but they didn't let the fact that they gave up that goal bother them.
I think that's the strength of a program. I mean, I think that's culture. I think that's the coaching staff. I think it's your senior leadership, your captains. I think it's really incredible. I mean, you know, there are many times throughout the season that you find your back up against the wall and you really look for that leadership in your culture to kind of power you through those situations.
So the men's basketball and women's basketball tournaments also going on now. So the men's basketball tournament, UMBC beating Virginia. Did you watch that at all?
Yeah, we did. That was what an exciting game.
So UMBC men's lacrosse coach is Ryan Moran, who's Pat Moran, who's the Princeton Academic Athletic Fellow. That's his brother. So, but I was shocked by how both teams played. It looked like Virginia wanted no part of even being there.
I mean, look, when it came down to it, you know, Virginia's defense was, you know, it was defense, defense, defense all year, and UMBC with no fear. I mean, they were playing loose, behind the back, through the leg passes. They were dribble penetration. It was an awesome game plan to see, and it seemed like they couldn't miss at times.
Did you notice that their Twitter feed went from 5,000 to 110,000?
I'm one of those followers.
You're going to unfollow them now? Or?
No. I'm on board. I mean, you got to keep following them.
And the guy who did it was, you know, like I bounced back and forth between, like, it was really good, and if anybody in this office here tried that, we'd have a real problem.
Yeah, it was funny. I think everyone got a bit of comic relief from it. You know, Ryan Moran's he's an awesome guy and a great lacrosse coach. You know, we're supporters of his program, and obviously with Professor Moran being one of our fellows. So really close, really cool to see. And you got to think that guy got a promotion. I mean, you hope.
I mean, you know, there were stories written calculating how much it would have cost UMBC to get that kind of publicity, like if without that. So, I mean, the guy brought millions of dollars to UMBC just by the Twitter.
You have to think. I mean, indirectly, absolutely. I mean, look, I saw some statistics on Twitter the other day about, after certain teams made a run or won a game in a, in a March Madness, how much their attendance rose or applications alone, whatever it means. So really, really cool. Those kids played with such passion. Their coach had such composure. He was so proud for his guys. It was really cool to see.
So there's a lot of stuff that's, there were a lot of great games. Nevada coming back. The team I'm rooting for is Purdue, and they lost their big guy. And, he has a bad elbow. So they have another 7-foot guy that they can plug in there. And everybody has this next man up mentality, which, I don't know who first came up with that expression. But did you see what the St. Joe's men's basketball coach said about the next man up mentality? He's like, we don't have a next man up mentality because our next man up isn't as good as the guy who just got hurt. And like, it was kind of the opposite of what everybody always says. It was pretty honest, too. Like, I mean, he said basically, I don't remember the guy's names, but he was like, Jerry Price isn't as good as Matt Matalon. Like, he said that by name. So, like, what do you do when you find yourself in situations where, you have to sort of breed that mentality of the next man up, but then you don't always have a next man up. And I thought those comments were good.
Those comments are great. I mean, I think internally, a lot of coaches may say that. I think the next man up mentality, the message as that comes from a coach is also a calming influence for your team. It's a don't panic. It's a sit back. We prepare a lot of different guys for situations. Even though, certain guys may not be starters, it only takes an opportunity for a guy to become the next superstar. So you hope that you did your job recruiting and you do your job coaching and preparing guys. But very honest, you can't fault the guy for saying that.
It was pretty good. And then my other question before we get into lacrosse is, and it ties into lacrosse, is, I mean, the insufferable part of the NCAA tournament is all of the trips to the monitor that the refs make. And any time the ball goes out of bounds in the last minute of a game, they're going to check to make sure it went on. And everybody's like, well, we want to get it right. But are you really getting it right anyway? Because a lot of these, one, makes you wonder how they ever had a tournament all these years without, if you wanted to get it right, like, did they get it right in the 1980s and the 1990s and all that? And then the other part of it is, when you watch the replay, and you and I are going for the ball, you can't tell who it went off of. So there really is no getting it right. But what they're doing is they're taking games and grinding them into a halt and giving free timeouts to teams, which I don't like either. But my question for you is, what do you think of replay in lacrosse? Now, every game is now being streamed somewhere and televised somewhere. I mean, do you think replay, expanded replay, is going to come to lacrosse? And would you want to see it?
It's a really tough question. I mean, look, I love the fact officiating games is difficult. It's difficult in a lot of sports. It's very difficult in men's lacrosse.
Well, I mean, look at it this way. Just the Sowers shot at the end of regulation against Rutgers. So it was 14-14. Princeton had the last possession. Sowers took a shot. I watched on the replay. It looked like it was in.
We've watched it a handful of times. We try not to get caught up with it.
But like my point is, like,
could have gone anyway. Still,
right? Exactly. My point is, who cares? Just keep playing. Like,
I would agree. I mean, look, you do want to get it right, but what makes me difficult, when I watch the NCAA tournament, I'm watching March Madness and they take all this time. I'm just, I watch a decent amount of college basketball. I watch a lot of Princeton hoops, but in terms of, I just hope they're doing that throughout the regular season too, because otherwise, it just seems a little odd to all of a sudden get it right. Where this game, sure, I know it means more, but there are a lot of games that mean a heck of a lot in order to get yourself to that tournament too. So
I just think like adding replay to lacrosse would be problematic.
I mean, they do it in the MLL. They actually, it was probably the year after I'd gotten done, they started adding it, and the two things they were looking at were the crease dive calls, which if you propel yourself and you make contact with the goalie before the ball crosses the goal line, it would be considered no goal. They could take it back. Or the two-point shot, because it's almost the same thing as, was his foot on the line for a three-pointer? Was he behind the line? And even with replay, I can promise you and show anyone examples that they get it wrong. So really difficult. And it does slow the game down.
The other thing I don't get about replay is, if you're going to look at the replay, like, why can't you review judgment calls? So, like, if you are looking at the replay to see, in football, in the NFL, you're looking at the replay to see if he got his feet down in bounds. But if you see he got his feet down, 1 foot in, 1 foot out, but the reason was because it was clearly pass interference, like, why can't you say that? Because that's what the replay is showing. But anyway, that's not why people are listening. They want to hear about Princeton lacrosse. actually, I think this is kind of interesting stuff, you know, sort of getting into the mind of coaches and how they think and see the issues that sort of translate from one sport to another. But going back to where I started, a fairly disappointing Ivy opener against Penn, 14-7 Quakers. It was 5-2 after the first quarter. Just, it was one of those games where it just seemed like constantly pushing the rock up the hill. You run into a goalie who makes 20 saves. You know, their defender did a good job on Sowers. You know, they got some offense from some people and you know, just never really got let Princeton get into a comfort zone. And what do you take away from that game?
You said it. I mean, look, we're disappointed as a staff. We're disappointed as a team. 2-2 at the end of the first. We didn't, you know, 5-2 at half. Wasn't the game, wasn't the pace we wanted. Got to tip your hat to Penn. They played every offensive possession to a timer, took the air out of the ball, kept our offense off the field, did a really nice job defensively. You know, not sliding, hedging, helping, playing our pick game very well. So, really, not to take anything away from them, and you know, they did a nice job. We didn't execute, you know, at the standard of Princeton lacrosse. And then, you know, in terms of the goalie, 20 saves again. Like, Reed Junkins, a heck of a player, but we shot really poorly too. And there's no excuses there. We just, you know, we didn't shoot, we didn't execute how we were supposed to. We had plenty of opportunities. Stepped into shots, feet set, you know, 8, 9, 10, 12 yards out. Opportunities that, you know, we hope and we prepare our guys to take advantage of, but we just weren't able to do so. So, very frustrating start, you know, and looking forward to rebounding this week.
So, the challenge is Yale. It's a big challenge to go up to New Haven and play. That's a 1 o'clock game on Saturday. And when you talk about Princeton-Yale, you got to start with faceoffs. And you have to be fairly encouraged by the improvement in the faceoff game.
Yeah, Sam Bonafide's done a great job. You know, he mixes it up.
He's 15-24 the other day.
He's got a handful of different moves.
And 19-33 against Rutgers.
Really tenacious on the ground. Really, you know, look, we put a lot of pressure on him as a senior captain.
The other thing about Bonafide the other game is he had 2 cost turnovers after faceoffs that he lost.
Really, really savvy plays. I think one was in a 7-5 at a point. We were down 7-5. He had lost a faceoff. He was then able to strip a man right on the opposing, right on the opposite side of the field at midline. Really, really heady play.
Bonafide, he's the kind of kid that, you know, when you get to know him a little bit, you feel like he's just the kind of kid that has like a special thing to him, to his personality, and like, you know, you just know great things are in store for him down the road. But also, I think he's done a lot in terms of sacrificing his own, you know, personal, what he could have had as an offensive middie to fill a need on the team as a faceoff guy.
I think you're spot on. We've always spoken about that. I'll ask you a trivia question right here. Give me the most random and most impressive fact about Sam Bonafide that he has also leveraged in an interview at one point.
He can identify any flag of any country in the world.
You're spot on. He was actually walking up from practice yesterday, chirping about some change of flag and color with Aaron Roberts, and the coaches were behind him chuckling. But at the same time, we then look at each other and say how blessed we are to coach kids like this, and it's really, you know, it's really impressive. Our guys are just awesome.
So it's not just Bonafide on the faceoff. I think Andrew Song has done a great job on the wings. Armin Nagalchi has done a really good job on the wings. Marine is tough on the wings if you want to go with one short stick and one pole. But again, the challenge when you play Yale is you have to have possession, and you have to have possessions because, one, you need possessions, but two, if Yale has possession after possession after possession with Ben Reeves, they're going to, you know, they're going to exploit that. So where are you mentally going into that?
Oh, I mean, look, we're fired up for the opportunity. It's the big one. You know, it's the biggest one because it's the next one, and our guys are going in, and Coach Soriano's done an outstanding job. Coach Soriano is our volunteer, works with our face-off crew. He's done an outstanding job, you know, adjusting our wing play, tweaking our face-off guys. You know, we may see a little bit more of a rotation there. The Mackey kid's great. You know, he's done a great job.
He was 15 for 15 against Fairfield.
Yeah, I mean,
there have been a bunch of those games this year, by
the way. There really have been. These face-off guys are becoming more and more dominant, you know, and it's a really big part of our game. So, look, we're looking forward to we're a battle-tested group. You know, they're a group that's played some really competitive games as well. We're excited to go up to New Haven and put our product out there. We got a good week of practice in. Working hard, grinding hard, fine-tuning our systems, getting better defensively, you know, and getting starting to locate our shots. So I'm hoping it comes to fruition this weekend.
When you play a team that has a special talent like Reeves from Yale, and he's not a one-man gang by any stretch of the imagination because they have a lot of good offensive players, even after the guys that graduated last year, Eric Scott, you know, my son Greg at Sacred Heart said Eric Scott had the hardest shot of anybody's ever shot on him. you know, when you have a kid like Reeves on the other team, do you have to spend a lot of time specifically focused on what you're going to do about him, or do you just have to, if you get too focused on one kid, you lose track of like the big picture?
Sure, you can't get too focused on one. I mean, we'll spend our time preparing for the young man. I mean, he's excellent. He's a great dodger. He's a great feeder. He has great poise with the ball. He's been doing it at a high level for a very long time. I mean, this is my fourth year coaching against the guy. I'm thrilled to see him graduating. But he's really good. I think that, you know, we'll put our time in. We've got a couple game plans. I mean, we face some really, really good attackmen starting in our early games with Krause and Laviano and Virginia. And then
Wasserman
was great, you know, from Monmouth. And then you move right into, you know, you've got the Hopkins attack,
Cole Williams,
which is not
Stanley.
Super dynamic dodging, but great lacrosse IQs. And then you got Hennenberg, who just blew up against Syracuse last weekend. And then you go into the Ivy League, and you got Reeves, Teat, Cheek, Simon Mathias, you name it. Like every team's got a big time attackman. So we spend our time focusing on it, all part of the game plan.
So that's Princeton Yale. It is 1:00 Saturday in New Haven. The game will be on the Ivy League Network, or you can hear it on the Listen Live app or WPRB. I hear the guy's pretty good. That's me.
Thank you.
You're supposed to react to that. So, yeah, I'll be on the radio if you want to listen to that.
Yeah, he's pretty good.
There you go. And we'll be back next week. We'll talk about that game. And then moving forward, it doesn't get much easier. Trip to Brown the following weekend. So getting into the heart of things here in the Ivy League for the Princeton lacrosse team. Good luck to the hockey team this weekend as well. And, Coach, thanks for being with us.
Good luck to Coach Fogarty and his staff. We're all pulling for you.
So that's the Princeton Laxcast for this week, and we'll be back next week for Coach Matt Madeline, Jerry Price, saying thank you for your support of Princeton men's lacrosse.